Do you like monsters?
Do you like Dungeons and Dragons?
Do you like monsters and dungeons and dragons?
Then do we have a show for you.
Kill Every Monster is a bi-weekly DM deep dive into every monster in the manual. The first part is a discussion about creature mechanics and lore, and the second half is a one-shot AP where the guest takes on the role of the monster.
Each episode of Kill Every Monster is a contained story, so you never have to worry about being caught up or listening out of order. Pick any monster you like and jump right in.
Alex Bohr took over as co-host so Aram could play his favorite monster, the Flumph. Aram, you know what the first question is. You wrote it. What is a Flumph for those blissfully unaware?
At its core, a Flumph is an underdog.
I hate this already.
A Flumph is the spirit. A Flump is the kind, wondrous spirit that lives in the heart
Shut
of every
up.
Child. A Flump is a little dream given tentacles and fart transportation. A Flump is a gift that, despite the fact that it hasn't been in a single adventure, except for like a Dragon magazine, it's lived through every single iteration of Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay, so
a Flump is a special, wonderful light that should live on in everyone's heart because it's so absurd. And that's what a Flump is. To find out more about the show and where you can listen, head on over to killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster. My name is Aram, my pronouns are he, him, and welcome to God's Fall.
My name is Michael Loving, my pronouns are he, him, and I'm playing Arunivar, level 1 elven wizard.
Last time on God's Fall, Arunivar, a lower noble from the elven and dwarven separatist kingdom of Ryland, set out on a secretive expedition to the jungles of southern Brennus. Traveling on a pair of fog cutters, they seek a fabled world gate, and have brought along a small crew of elves, dwarves, and a blind stone giant known as Fogon.
Is ironwood flammable?
Ironwood is flammable at a certain temperature.
Okay.
But you have to get it, but it has to be high, but it is flammable. So it can catch fire just like anything else. And once it does burn, it burns
right.
really hot. It is very hard to get out.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, the sail, a cloth, and everything else.
So they probably could light a fire on an ironwood ship technically,
be
but
safer.
Maybe don't want to.
But not safe.
Yeah.
And fire and ships are bad, bad things.
Yeah. Plus, if we're trying to be stealthy, you know,
right.
Lighting a fire on the deck of the ship.
A big, huge
out in the open
plume
ocean.
Of smoke even coming out of a fog cloud.
Right.
I mean, people are aware you have these ships. Even if they can't see
right.
your ship, if there's a weird
yeah.
bank of fog coming at them on a crystal clear day, they know what the fuck is going on.
Or just a mysteriously unexplained light way out at sea. Like, that's not a star. That's
there's something going on there. Exactly.
That's fair. I will carefully climb down.
Easy.
And head back to
I will take 20 to climb
to
down.
Yeah. For climbing down with as many handholds as it, I can take a 10.
There's another elf there who is a low-level royal similar to you that you've known growing up about your same age and everything, kind of in the same boat you are. What is their name and how do you know each other?
I actually genuinely at one point, I think it was yesterday, I considered just making a list of NPC names so that at any point if I needed to ask somebody's
name, just tell me what their name
I would
is.
Just tell... I would just tell you, I would be like, I start talking to, and then just gave a name. And I'm like, and they're this person on the expedition.
That's amazing.
This is another elf who's like also a royal.
Yeah, like you know, lower level royal, not really lined up for the order. Not this in the same situation you are, so not from your branch, right? But, you
okay.
know, from the core, but still at the same point, like never going to be,
you know, king, right? Unless everyone dies, right? Unless you, unless that volcano blows up while you guys are on this mission, then yes, they could be king, right? Like if everyone went, like if they were designated survivor, right? But otherwise than that, they're not going to be king. But they're still considered proper royalty, whereas you are not.
Oh, okay. Sure. That makes sense. Male, female, or...
whatever you want.
Okay. I was going to say male, female, or in between.
Maybe it was you and I talked about this. I think it was you and I, where we talked about how elves, they're born without sexuality, and they all choose for themselves. It's a whole thing. Like, there's... it's kind of like a... like any coming of age ceremony, a quinceañera or anything. You know what I mean? Like it's an elven tradition. Yeah. They have a big party, and you make it, and then you make a choice for yourself. And some people don't want the party. Some people just it's a private thing just for them, and they're quiet about it. But most people celebrate it, and it's a unique thing amongst elves, and they find it very odd that no one else does it or that they can't do it. You know, and so that's just how it is.
Humans are weird. They just have gender reveal parties for their babies instead of...
It's just picking one. They just...
decide before the baby's even born what it's going to be.
Right, exactly. It's weird. Yeah. It's very odd for them. Yeah, but then again, humans are odd in general.
What happens if it doesn't want to be a boy?
Obviously, there are trans people born in this world.
Sure.
And I would say that the elves are particularly sensitive to that.
Makes sense.
Because they see it... It seems particularly cruel to elves. that the other
races don't have the choice,
and if they can't choose it, at the very least they should align with what they are given, and that's not how it works out, and it does, and it, to such alarming numbers that it, you know, even though it's a percentage of the population, it does seem particularly cruel to elves, and it's just one more thing where they're like, you know, to the ones that don't like humans, they would see it as being a truly different being. It's one more reason why they're lesser. Right. But to the ones who aren't, you know, it's like, in even I think to the ones that are separatists, it's a particular sorrow. It's a particular sadness.
They have no control over that expression of themselves.
While magic is so prominent in the world and while elves are so in tune with it, I would say that there is a sect of Ryland that goes out as emissaries, basically, and shows mercy in certain cases, and this would be one of the things that they would show mercy about and use their magics to help people find who they really are.
It's like humans aren't allowed in Ryland unless they're trans, and then they're fine.
Correct. If they come for this, they can visit for, they're the only humans allowed on Ryland are those seeking to become who they really are.
They're embracing the more elven part of their nature and choosing their gender instead of having it assigned. So trans people are allowed in Ryland, cis people are not.
Only for the ceremony, and then you leave. You're there long enough to find who you are and then leave. Right.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love it.
That would probably keep it a much nicer city, honestly, if they just told cis people, you're just not allowed here.
It really would.
No straight white dudes allowed in Ryland. Yeah, you just specifically banned.
Fuck out. What is your character work? How do they dress?
I think our Univar probably presents himself a little eccentrically. I kind of see wearing probably not even slightly outdated. Wearing outdated high elven fashion.
He's kind of a retro dick, is that what you're saying?
A little bit. The shops at vintage stores and goes and wears not full Victorian clothing, but definitely
he'd be one of those elves that shows up on a Sunday at a park for a 1920s bike ride. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just this appreciation for elven history and
he's an elven hipster, was what you're saying. He's kind of an elven hipster.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, our Univar probably wears just a little outdated kind of custom clothing.
Owns bracers, as they would call them, right?
Right.
Owns more than one pair or more than a pair that they just got at a wedding. Like they actually have several sets of bracers.
I mean, for the expedition, kept their outfit fairly practical.
Sure.
Nothing too flowy that is going to snag. I mean, it's a jungle. It's going to be hot.
Everything's about fit now, right? Because you have to have to dress practically, but yours aren't going to be baggy cargo pants.
Right.
You're still going into the jungle with a certain degree of decency.
Decorum.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm representing the crown on this mission. I have to conduct myself appropriately.
You have to look less like shit.
I'm not wearing Crocs through the jungle here.
The first thing Commander Soria is going to do when she gets on land is take off her boots, right?
Right.
And walk barefoot through the undergrowth. You wouldn't consider that. The idea of wearing Crocs and walking through swamp, jungle is just disgusting.
I mean, the little holes would probably help with water drainage, but...
Yes, but still. No, in fact, you have boots that have been enchanted, right, to repel mud and moisture, as are all the clothes you're wearing.
Pretty tall boots, I would imagine.
Like, totally. Not just like, under not the like, knee.
Yeah, like long, like riding boots. I think riding boots are long. I don't actually know.
And they kind of flare out a little bit at the top in this obnoxious way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so all of your clothing and your gear is magically enchanted to repel both mud and water. Because why not? I mean, magic is so prevalent in that
snags,
time. And
you know,
you're
royal
look out enough.
For thorns and all of that kind of thing.
It's just practical, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you could do it and you were going to invest in a mission like this, why wouldn't you do it?
It's just got like mending and prestidigitation both just kind of woven into the fabric. So, you know, small snags fix themselves and small stains clean themselves.
The fabric was, you know, of like it was woven from the fibers of ironwood leaves or whatever it is. Yeah, but it's got this innate magical property. Now, you and the other royals would have this weave on. The guards probably wouldn't. There's a little bit of there's a bit of a clear line right there. I would think the elves of Ryland are kind of like the British in the early 1900s, like, you know, how strict their class structure is. Yeah, it's like that.
I'm just in a khaki, like, safari outfit with the hat and everything. Yeah.
Right. But it's like hand-designed by Hugo Boss. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This was sewn for you. You didn't buy off the rack.
Yeah. It's designed by Tim Elephant Gun. That's right.
Exactly. And it's kind of like, you have a pouch around your waist that is a belt of many things. Like, you are outfitted properly for this.
That's good to know. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to use my belt of many things later.
Write that down. And like, one of the things in your belt of many things is one of the first retractable spy glasses. So you have this really nice spy glass that folds down to about 4 inches long and actually opens up.
Which came in very handy when I was mapping the area from the top of the tree.
It completely did. Yeah. Absolutely. And that is like a normal spyglass is, I think, 1,000 gold. I'd say this
one. Real expensive.
This is like, this was your graduation gift the second time, right? So this is like a 10,000 gold piece item. This is the most expensive thing you own.
I can't wait for that to be taken away from me during my prologue so I can't hawk it for money later in the story.
Or just break.
Yeah.
What if I get a hawker? You're in a goddamn jungle. Anyways, so that's what you've got. So you walk back up to camp, and who is this person that you're greeting that is royalty from the main tree?
Oh, I think her name is Beatrice.
I like that. Beatrice, okay.
And she's a little bit younger than me. I think she's still in grad school. This is like her... her like senior seminar, basically. Like,
gotcha.
You know, she's mastering her.
This is her thesis. Is that what you're
saying? Exactly. Yeah. You know, this is the research project that she's on. She's writing her thesis on this and is super excited to be along with the.
There's been a lot of like higher level things done on this, like, you know, the gods and the energy of the gates and this and that. And so she's like, you know, how does the energy of the gate affect local wildlife living within a 500-foot radius? Like, that's where she had to carve out a little bit of a unique angle.
Very specific niche that she could realistically complete as part of this project.
Perfect. I love it. Yeah. So she wants to know about all the local flora and fauna immediately around the gate and how it's affected. That's her focus.
On the way back, can I catch that like shimmery butterfly? That
totally, 100%.
All right, I'll bring the butterfly back. I'll let her know, Beatrice.
And she looks up, and she has like 12 plants that have been very carefully picked, are placed on a cloth she has rolled out, and she is clearly categorizing things already. And she turns, she's like, "Oh, hey, what does she call you? I can't imagine everyone calls you says by your first name.
Our Univar all of the time.
All the times. What do they call you? What's the short version?
Probably just Aryun.
Arnie.
Mm.
No, it's not Arnie. It's Aryun.
They might attempt it.
Yeah, it's Aryun.
It's like once.
Oh, hey, Aryun. What do you have there?
It's a...
She already has, like, her hands on yours, opening them, like, yeah. Looking through. And the butterfly is just, like, sitting there. Like, it's not flying away. It's just kind of sitting on your hands.
I know you're studying wildlife from near the gate, but I found this and thought maybe you could use it as a comparison point for once we get closer.
And she kind of reaches behind her and she picks up this white stone on that's just sitting on the cloth next to her. And she taps it twice with her thumb as she brings it towards the butterfly, and it begins to glow. And as light hits this thing, like, the shimmering is almost opalescent. It's like that sheen you get on oil when there's a puddle with a little bit of oil on the top, and like there's right. That rainbow oily sheen on it. That's what this butterfly looks like. And she's just fascinated by it. Everything here is exactly as amazing as I hoped it would be, and we haven't even started yet.
I'll, you know, kind of continue on my way back to...
As soon as you start to leave, she grabs your arm and she pulls you right back.
Yeah.
And she's like, I mean, look at all the... Like, she will not let you go. Once you started this, like, she's it. She tells you about every plant she's found. She tells you about how the soil seems different. She tells you about how it's a little bit more humid than she thought it would be, even in these conditions. And she goes on for, like, 30 minutes before you can finally break away.
The first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to, like, just go, like, rinse my hands in the ocean before I go do anything else, because that butterfly was almost definitely poisonous. Yeah, right?
It was screaming poison, wasn't it?
It's a jungle. Everything is poisonous until proven otherwise.
Fair. The ocean is lovely here. It is nice and warm. It is, I mean, it is like, it's like bath water warm, right? But it is where you could sit in it for a prolonged period of time, half in and out of the water and not get cold. It's that kind of lovely.
I'll go check in with Siora.
Okay. Well, she's not on shore yet. Only Hevra is on shore. Siora is...
Oh, okay.
Wait.
I'm sorry. You said Siora and Hevra both came, but Logar and Vogon both stayed back.
And Siora totally would come because she is the most trained ranger on the mission, so that would make sense. So, yeah. So she came to shore, immediately started barking out orders to the other soldiers and get everything cleared.
Just imagining Siora staying back on the fog cutter. All right, clerics and grad students first. Everyone else, stay back.
I'm just beyond the ship. Yeah, actually, as soon as you're walking back up to the main camp, as soon as you
break
away.
Let's see what kind of film we're in. If all the college students get eaten, it's a horror movie. Everybody get your silver weapons prepared.
So as soon as you break away from Beatrice, she kind of makes a line for you because she saw you earlier climbing the trees. All Univar?
Yes, Commander.
Good to see you this evening.
You as well, Commander.
All things well?
As well as I suppose they can be. We're not under attack.
We are not. I noticed you took a view earlier of the surrounding forest. What did you find?
I'll show her my map. I've composed a rough sketch. It's not much. I don't have anything to compare for scale at the moment. Mountains are notoriously tricky.
She's looking over and she's running her finger past and nodding. Make a copy of this for myself and for Lieutenant Hevra. Excellent work.
I'll glance around and see if there's like a grad student that I can task with this sort of menial.
The only other really student is Beatrice. The other ones are all soldiers.
Running through my head, trying to think if there's like a duplicate spell. And I don't actually think there is one that'll just like reproduce written text on something, which kind of surprises me. I know, right? You would think that there would be some kind of like transcribe spell.
I mean, even if there isn't, I would say that there would have to be a cantrip. It's just a cantrip. It's got to be a cantrip.
Right. Yeah,
like a page an hour, maybe.
Of non-magical text.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It'd be all non-magical text. It'd be like, how many pages an hour you think? Like 10 pages an hour?
For a cantrip, it would need to be fairly slow. Like
10 pages an hour is slow.
That is pretty slow, yeah.
10 pages an hour if it's written.
Right.
A page an hour if it's drawings.
Yeah,
so yours would take longer. Yeah, yours would take longer. So it would take the whole night of you recasting the spell every hour.
Right.
So not as focused as you would be.
Yeah,
but still, you have to like get up every hour to do it.
That's really tedious. I love it.
Yeah.
It would take exactly as much time to just transcribe it by hand.
Right.
But you're an elf, so why the hell would you do that instead of just using magic? Yeah, exactly.
You could make a mistake out of the repetition, but you also could just be repeating a mistake over and over. Yeah. So there are those two problems with it. Yeah, yeah.
We'll write the spell up and we'll put it in the Rise book. We'll 100%. Add a new cantrip to the game.
There's no reason not to. It would make complete sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll call it scribe.
Yeah. Or transcribe. Transliterate.
Sure.
I don't think transliterate. No. Transcribe. Anyway.
It should also have the function that it works to record speech. So if you cast it and just spoke out loud for the next hour, it would write down everything you said. So it does that as well.
It takes dictation as well.
It's got multiple functions. Why not?
Yeah.
I fucking love it. Otherwise, it should just be an offshoot of like Mage Hand.
it's like a low level version of Unseen Servant. I love the idea of like a bunch of like scholars that all know Unseen Servant just casting it like take this down, and then just their Unseen Servants just writing everything down that they're saying.
Be one of the first spells I learned. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Do the dishes, clean the house, get my laundry. And,
oh no, kidding. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Every now and then, you know, people do that. Like, if you could learn any spell in D&D, what spell would it be? Actually, Unseen Servant. You make a strong case for Unseen Servant.
Real strong case.
That'd be real handy.
Featherfall would be pretty great.
Featherfall would be pretty nice, too.
Just jump off anything you wanted to. Featherfall!
There's a lot of spells that would be pretty useful.
There's a lot of cantrips that in the game seem useless, but in your life...
I mean, even Prestidigitation would be super useful in real life.
100%.
It's just like, oh yeah, just cast Prestidigitation and clean all the ship.
Yeah,
like,
but if I was going to say one cantrip that I could learn, it'd be Mending. Straight up. It'd be Mending.
Yeah, that's another really... strong entry, especially if it worked on like electronics and stuff. Like, oh shit, my TV's broken. Mending. Hey, it works again. Yay. That saved me thousands of dollars.
Yeah, the world would be very different if there was mending. It, like,
right.
All of society would be different. That's another thing about magic. Like, I don't want to go off too much on a tangent here, but
yeah,
like if there really was the level of magic you see in these worlds, like these worlds would be different. They would change. They'd be so very different, and they're not, and it's frustrating.
Especially when you get that level of magic and you have races that can live for 1,000 years.
To plan with that magic. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's completely insane. And then eventually a god's favor once in a while. So that things could be even better or worse, but sometimes better.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be a world radically different than anything in human history.
100%. 100%. Which is why ships like fog cutters can even exist. Why they can pour so much magic into a single vessel, because it's actually worth it.
Which is why people's arguments about realism in D&D don't hold up, is because it would look nothing like our real, so shut up.
No, it wouldn't. And people wouldn't think the way that we think, because magic, period.
Yeah.
This is how it would be. All right, so you have broken away. You are, I assume this was a short conversation with Sora. She's got things to do.
She's got things to do. I'm not that important. She noticed I was doing something useful and wanted to capitalize on that.
Yes, do it for her now. So you're back in your tent, and you are royalty, so you have your own tent, and it's small, but there's enough room in it where there is like a cot, but a nice cot, right? Like it's the size of a cot,
right?
But it's the same kind of layout, but it's nice and it's comfortable. And then you'd have a small fold down desk and a chair, and that's it. That's all you'd have room for. So a small desk and a cot. And that's luxurious compared to how the soldiers are sleeping, which is everyone in one tent.
I'll start my transcription ritual then, or process. And
every hour on the hour.
I'll probably just meditate between
that makes
castings.
Sense. And it's easy enough. You basically just meditate for the hour, and then you wake up and you cast it again. You go right back into it. So you can take a long rest that way.
I think that's what I'll do, because I'm presuming that we're waiting for morning, probably.
By the time you're here, with everything that's gone on, it's like 2 a.m. So by the time you're done, dawn will be breaking anyway.
Yeah, it'll be about 6.
And
the sun will start coming up and we can start moving. Honestly, we could probably, because we're elves and dwarves and we all have dark vision, as soon as the horizon starts getting brighter, we'd probably be able to see just fine.
Yeah, the absolute moment. The only reason why you might hesitate just a little bit to enter at normal dawn, right, is that you want to be sure you're out of the nocturnal cycle of whatever animals live in that jungle, because that's when the hunters would be out.
You know, depending on how much we know about the jungle, we don't know that for sure.
You don't know it for sure, but
who knows?
But
the diurnal predators could be even worse.
It's possible. You're just going from what you've interpreted, that you know in general.
In general.
The scary things come out at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason why we're afraid of the darkness, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but this is also a world where dragons exist.
That's
true. I don't think dragons give a fuck whether the sun is up or not.
Not
so.
All of them. Yeah, yeah. Although, yeah. There's got to be a couple nocturnal dragons.
Probably.
Right? That'd be interesting, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever faced a dragon at night.
They all have dark vision, so there's no reason, and blind sight. And there's no reason why they
wouldn't. There's no reason why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they come out at night? Why wouldn't you face a dragon in the middle of night? That'd be terrifying. Imagine fighting a dragon underground where it's in total darkness, but they can see because they have blind sight.
Yeah.
Off topic. Back up. So you do this until dawn. At dawn, you can hear the noise of the other ship, the other longboats approach, not longboats, rowboats approaching with the rest of the crew. There's, I would say, two or three people left on the ship. There's 24 people. Let's say that there's 24 people. They left four people on the ship, right? The bare crew, just in case something was to go wrong, like if their anchor was to give way and the ship, you know, four people is enough to control that ship if needed
right.
be, if they had to, yep. if it absolutely had to move. Four people could get it done. So that's what they've left on the ship. And now 20 people are ashore, including
right.
Lieutenant Logar and Vogon. When Vogon got aboard, and they had to kind of go back for him because, like, Vogon can be in the rowboat.
Sure.
And then someone else can be in the rowboat, and that's it.
Yeah.
And Vogon can paddle but can't really steer. So Vogon has to come over on his own. Vogon got off the boat, ignored everything that was going on, walked right up to the edge of the jungle and sat down and has been staring into the jungle ever since.
Okay.
All the tents are set up. They're just moving gear out of the boats and onto shore. And that's what they've been doing for the last couple hours. So it'd be around noon when they'd finally be done with all that.
Yeah. And I have to transcribe the map two times.
Correct.
Which should probably
and
take
all your notes.
Right.
One so page an hour.
Yeah. Take me a little bit. Yeah. It was 10 pages an hour.
Yeah.
Unless we're doing the.
No, because these are drawings and you are doing drawings and writing. This isn't just text. So this is one page an hour.
Yeah.
And you like to take notes. So I'd say this is about like 6 or 8 pages of notes, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe in 10, you know, so it would take a while.
So it probably takes me till almost noon to actually finish the whole process. So,
yep.
I'll like emerge from my tent and I'll be like, oh, there's a giant kneeling by the forest over there.
Yeah, there's a lot of activity. I see and again, the edge of the forest, about 100 feet away from your campsite, which almost hugs the shoreline. There was kind of a raised area with this like long flat rock, and they set up on top of that to be out of the tides and have a little bit better viewpoint. But for the most part, it's this flat open area between you and the forest.
Well, I'll go look for it. Was Siora and she said Hevra, right? Was
Correct.
The other person she wanted me to give me a map to. So
both of which you're told very quickly are in Siora's tent.
Okay. I'll walk that way then.
And you walk up there. There's an elf on duty who, you know, sees you, nods. They're formal, but there's 24 of you. They know who you are. They don't
ask
why you're here. They just open up the flap and say, hey, this guy's here, right?
Yeah.
So you are announced and she waves you in. Her and Lieutenant Hevra are leaned over a table. It's a relatively good size considering the fact that they had to put on a ship and drag it to shore in a rowboat. And they have papers laid out of the shoreline that they already have, like whatever information they could gather, which is not much. Like maybe some people looked at it and like did some rough sketches. And she sees you and that you have a stack of papers in your hand, and she waves you over. She takes them from you. Well done. And she starts laying them out immediately to show Hevra what you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Explain this in your own words. What are we facing here?
She's talking to me or she's talking to Hevra?
Commander Siora is talking to you.
Okay. Well, it appears the jungle continues all the way up to the mountain, mostly unbroken. There are pockets of empty space, few and far between, and finding them might prove more difficult than simply blazing a trail.
Lieutenant Hevra leans in. But could you, though? Could you take us to these? Could you believe you could find these, or that we could find these, or that our trackers could get from place to place? If we could, to make the journey a little bit more sensible, it would seem.
I don't see why not. Siora is not a Beastmaster Ranger, is she?
No, Siora is a hunter.
No, like, hawk animal companion or something she could send up for?
No, I mean, she could cast magic, frankly, but no, I mean, it's not really her thing. She's more of a just, like, know the land and adapt to surroundings she's in. And she's, as she's listening to you, she's nodding, and she's already kind of tracing an outline with her finger of a path she would take. So she already looks like she's planning for what you're talking about.
Right. It's also worth noting that there appears to be some sort of water feature over here. I sort of gesture towards where the clouds were. It may be easier going near the banks, potentially.
Commander Soria comes up behind you, and she puts her finger down approximately where this river could be, and she traces it back to the ocean, and it would look like it might come out south or north of you. It could be either one. But there's a couple different options. She's like, if we can find this river, it would surely take us to the mountains. That must be the source of it. This is good. This is the plan. We set forth in the next hour, let's say in the next hour, because they were already set up. So in the next hour, they leave and head towards this river. That's the plan.
Okay.
And it's going to be you. It's going to be Siora. It's going to be Hevra. It's going to be Beatrice. And then it's going to be a couple, basically, scouts.
All right. Well, I'm going to follow the scouts because I'm not a scout.
So the way that they would do this is that Siora would stay with the main group as the leader.
Mm-hmm.
She would send one scout on either side. So it's kind of like a Y as you guys are moving through this jungle with like one 50 feet to the left and one 50 feet to the right and both kind of in front of you a bit, right? And then have one more scout take up lead behind while she stays with the three of you. And that's how you'd move through the forest.
Okay.
So there's seven of you in total.
Sure. Just keeping track of numbers of people.
You head towards the edge. So this group assembles, gets their gear together. You throw your pack on, which again is, I mean, you know, you're in good shape, but this is not, and you're young.
Right.
But this is not what you're used to doing.
Yeah.
And this pack is heavy. It is surprisingly heavy. You're already kind of regretting some of the things you've taken.
The heaviest that it's been since I was in grad school.
100%. Yeah. And you didn't walk through a jungle in grad school.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you get to the edge and Vogon is just sitting there at the edge. And as you approach, Commander Siora kind of walks up around to his right and nods. And the giant seems to be aware. Whenever people seem to get near him, he seems to be very aware of where they are, almost as if he could see them. And the giant turns to face her and nods, and then points into the forest in a straight line. And that lines up exactly with where you said the mountain was.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. It's a lot of rock in a mountain. It probably has a pretty strong pull.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then stands up and makes to go with you. And Siora kind of looks over towards Hevra. And Hevra looks back and, no. You don't understand. We are going to just look first and then the rest of the expedition will come. You see, you will wait here with the others and we will return for you. And Vogon doesn't speak, but Vogon just stands there and again points towards the mountain and is clearly intending on coming.
With respect, Commander, I do believe it would be easier to follow a trail blazed by, and I kind of just tip my head towards Vogon.
I do not disagree. However, making a blind stone giant into a forest is not exactly subtle, but we shall adapt. And she talks to her scouts real quick, and they basically now form up a little closer so they can keep an eye. They're still in the Y formation, but they have eyes on Vogon and are just taking cues from him the whole time. And you guys set off into the forest. Vogon's already having to push over trees to get past, but he's not tripping. He's not stumbling. Like, he's making his way competently through.
He's just an elephant, just jungle. Clearing his way through a tree that's inconveniently placed for him.
It's literally what he is. He is a two-legged elephant going through those trees, but not ungracefully, just with constant strength and sureness, pushing things aside. Yeah. So you guys.
And the good thing is, you know,
Anything that's willing to mess with a stone giant was going to attack us anyway.
Yes, that's very true.
And there's probably a lot of things that are not willing to attack a stone giant that might have been willing to attack a group of elves.
This is a fair assumption. I think you could say that there is both an unfortunate attraction of having a stone giant in the party and a repellent that is good from having a stone giant in the party.
But hey, at the same time, anything that decides to attack us while we have a stone giant in the party,
surely
we also
would have
now have... Well, yeah, that and the fact now we have a stone giant to help deal with that
right,
as well.
Exactly.
Which we wouldn't have had before either.
Yes,
so.
An elderly blind one, but still a stone giant.
I mean, you know, he has disadvantage. He has disadvantage to his hit rolls, but if he hits, it's still going to hurt a lot.
Right. All right, so I would say that you guys walk for a couple hours, and then the commander calls for y'all to halt for a break, and y'all break open water of skins and take drinks. Then she walks up to you and she taps you kind of pointedly on your shoulder. It's this habit she has where when she gets people's attention, she tends to walk past them rather briskly and just tap them on the shoulder, and that's your cue to follow. It's unsettling for an elf, for anyone really, but particularly for elves. And it's kind of like,
because elves aren't very touchy. Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's definitely a power thing she's always done, right? So she taps you on the shoulder and that's your cue to follow. And she walks.
Touching is like really familiar for elves just because of the way that they're wired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because their skin's just more sensitive. Yeah.
Right.
So you guys walk up to the, you walk up to like a large tree, which isn't far from you. It's like 10 feet. And she begins to climb and is clearly gesturing for you to follow her.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's easy enough. It's the same kind of heavily vine tree. You know these trees now, so it's not. I mean, you're not going to fall.
Right. I was going to say, I'll. If we're using the take an X mechanics, I'll go ahead and just take a 10 to climb the tree.
There'd be no reason for you not to.
Yeah. Up to the top of the tree.
Right.
She's a wild elf and a master scout. I'm a coffee shop revolutionary,
right.
Like
who likes to climb trees on occasion, right?
Right, yeah. Who probably, honestly, outside of the last tree that I climbed, it's probably been quite some time since I climbed a tree.
Sure. Why would you? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would say that you'd probably be one of the ones that would be more inclined to nature than some of the other city elves, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So you know your way around a tree, at the very least. So you guys climb relatively easily. You get up to the top, and she's looking out over it. And what she wanted was your set of eyes here as well. Because you're a couple hours in, you're a little closer to everything. And you are now, you got a little, this tree is a little taller than the one that was at the edge of the forest. And you have a clearer view in, and you can now see a couple regular clearings in the jungle ahead of you, and you could kind of hopscotch to them on your way to the mountain. So it's like four, maybe five stops along the way.
How big do these clearings look? I mean, were you talking like they're like a couple hundred yards across?
Some of them are as small as a couple hundred feet.
Okay.
Some of one of them in particular looks to be a quarter of a mile. It's actually huge.
Okay. So that one would actually probably save us a fair bit of time slogging through the jungle.
And that one's about at about the middle point between you and the mountain, and there's clearly a river cutting through it.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll be helpful because then we'll find the river too.
You would estimate it'll take you 3 days to reach that clearing, and then another three days to reach the mountain.
Okay. I will.
Slow going. It's not necessarily that far, but in this thick of foliage, it's rather slow moving.
Yeah, moving through dense jungle takes quite some time.
Yep.
Yeah, even when you have a
stone giant
to clear the way for you. Yeah.
Yep.
So from the top of the tree, I'll pull out my spyglass and I'll look around and I'll see if I can see the archway.
Yeah.
From up here yet, or
I would roll me a perception.
Okay.
Or an investigation, whichever one you want.
I'll do perception. Actually, I guess I'll actually do investigation. I'm not trained in it, but my intelligence is higher, so it's actually a better modifier by one.
Right.
It's a 7.
Yeah, nothing. I mean, even the mountain's hard to make out at this distance because there's a lot of fog around it and a lot of water. It seems to be almost near constant rainfall. So, you see the mountain and that's it. You see a mountain certainly big enough to contain a gate. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this the only mountain in this jungle, or is it like a mountain range?
No, this is just like the most prominent one. Like there are peaks that, like, it's a pretty craggy jungle in the center in general. So there's a bunch of peaks popping out of it, almost like broken teeth. But as far as like a large concentration of mountain, that is the core thing you're looking at.
Okay.
It's only the tallest ones and the oldest ones.
Sure. So I will, after looking, I'll just kind of offer the spyglass to her.
Sure.
I don't see much remarkable.
And she happily takes it and she begins to search. And as she's carefully looking over the jungle, you swear you could hear a bell. A single note from a bell kind of loft above the forest.
Does she react at all?
No, not that you can tell.
You said it just kind of lofts above the forest?
Yeah, it almost rises like heat would.
Okay.
Like, it has this weird quality to it.
Any sense of what direction it came from, or just...
Roll perception.
10.
Roughly towards the mountain.
So somewhere kind of, in front of us.
Yeah. Somewhere kind of in front. Yeah, but yeah, distance is weird. It could be incredibly soft, or it could be incredibly loud and just be at a very far distance. Like, it's impossible to
very
tell.
Very far away, or muffled by the canopy, or any number of things.
But roughly in the same way you're going.
Okay.
And there's a pull when you hear it. Like, there's a sweetness to this note and a intimacy to this note and a heat to this. The words that you're assigning to it don't really make sense to you, but there's just this pull you can't explain.
Okay. That's mildly unsettling.
And the jungle has been unsettling since you set foot here.
Sure.
It's, you know, everything about it has been unsettling.
Have we seen or heard much wildlife? I mean, is this jungle like teeming with creatures and stuff?
You're coming across things all the time. And Beatrice is just being tortured because she wants to stop every 5 minutes and then spend the next 2 weeks categorizing a single bit of, you know what I mean?
Right.
She's really interested in getting to the gate too, but it's torturing her to just skip over what could be an entire paper every 100 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like walking with a beagle where they just have to stop and smell every single like out of place stone on the entire walk.
Yep. And no one else will tolerate her. Everyone there is for a very specific reason. Even Lieutenant, Hevra is exhausted with her. So you're the only target she can come to. You're the only person she can share. So she's sharing everything with you.
I'm that person in real life. I have coworkers that like literally everyone else is mean to, and I'm like, they're people. You need to be nice to them.
Right.
And so they come to me with everything because I'm the only person that doesn't completely blow them off anytime they try and talk.
That's basically what you're dealing with right now.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Yep.
But I feel too bad to not like humor them because
she's also genuinely likable. I mean, it's not like, is she like, is it exhausting?
Right.
Beatrice is a bit exhausting, but she's a nice person that you like.
She's a sweetheart.
And she's also the only other person that you can kind of communicate with. I mean, the scouts are a very elite bunch that while they show deference to you because you're royalty,
certainly, it's just out of,
you're not comfortable with them.
Obligation. Right. Yeah. Like,
and
yeah,
the other ones are way too high ranking, so there's no fraternity there at all. So she's it. She's like really your only friend.
Are we still in the tree or have we started moving again?
No, you guys have come back down at this at this point. She just wanted a second set of eyes. She wanted to confirm you're going the right way. Always helpful.
All right.
And she wanted,
I want to keep track of my 10,000 gold spyglass. Did she give it back to me?
She definitely gave it back to you. She absolutely.
Okay, all right.
She there was a moment where she noted it. Like she kind of like, weighed it in her hand and she noted the quality and then she handed it back. Yeah.
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 Okay.
And you guys set off again?
I assume so.
All right.
I mean, so long as she gives Vogon the okay and he starts, pushing some trees over.
Yeah, he doesn't really. It's interesting with Vogon. Like he'll, again, he doesn't speak. He hasn't said a single word.
Okay.
He just kind of does things. Like if he's told like we're taking a break, he stops and takes a break. And if he's told, well, we're getting back up again to get ready, he stands back up and starts to move, but he doesn't communicate at all. He just does the things.
Okay. How long has it been since we left the camp?
I'd say now you're about 5 hours in. So okay. You left about an hour after dawn, sorry, an hour after noon. So now it's getting to be about 6 or 7 and it's starting to, the sun is beginning to set. So you have
it's starting its sort of downward arc.
Yeah. So you have a decision to make. Do you set up, because it is summer, so it's very long days, especially down here.
Right.
And you have a decision to either set up camp, to stop, to return. I mean, what are you guys doing?
I mean, I love that you're asking me
what
this.
What is your opinion?
I'm not the commander.
Commander Siora is the kind that likes to hear voices. So okay. What would your opinion be?
Have we seen any signs of any dangerous wildlife? Have there been like, you know, like really like clawed up trees, like from cats, like marking their territory, or we found any like bodies that have been mangled?
I would say that there's been signs. There's certainly been some corpses, nothing fresh, like, you know, old things, but of large creatures. And, you know, large, what looked like plant-eating creatures, but they were taken down by something large too. And there's clearly trees have been marked up, some that have just been pushed over completely. When you get to, like, you know, if there's like a small spring, you would come across, there's signs of very large animals using it for water, that kind of thing. So yeah, sure. There's certainly signs of danger. You also notice while you're up in that tree between the two of you that if you were to press on for about another hour, you would reach a clearing.
Well, if we think we can reach that clearing, then it would at least give us better sight lines if anything was to approach us while we camped.
And Sierra nods, and she clearly wanted to hear that answer. That was the answer she was looking for. All right, let's continue on. And you all press on. And about an hour later, you start to see breaks through the trees, and you hear a bubbling of water as you approach. And you come to a clearing several hundred feet wide. The ground is covered in a thick, vibrant moss, and the air has like a tinge of sweetness to it. In the center of all of this is this bubbling brook that's forming a small pond around it, and a little trickle of, and little kind of trickles of water that then vanish into the moss.
Prestidigitation will let me create harmless sensory effects.
Sure.
Like faint musical notes or an odd odor.
Yes.
Would it be possible for our Univar, as we kind of enter this clearing and I smell this kind of sweet smell and everything, would it be possible for me to use prestidigitation to sort of mimic the chime of that bell that I heard earlier and kind of ring that out across this clearing?
I don't see why not. You could absolutely do that. Yeah. Totally.
I'm gonna attempt doing that and see if there's any reaction or response.
Roll performance to recreate the sound.
Oh, Rom, I'm not proficient in performance till next level.
Yeah, sorry, buddy.
Is this charisma or intelligence for...
I would say charisma. Well, no, because it's because you're trying to interpret the sound, whichever one you want.
I'm going to use intelligence because I'm trying to recreate a noise.
Yeah.
Magically, not with my, like, you know, skill on a...
Yeah, you're trying to create the image in your mind into reality.
16.
16? Yeah, you let out this bell that has the same qualities, rings in the same way, feels both close and distant at the same time. You're able to roughly recreate this sound, and everyone kind of looks at you because they know who casts magic. Like, everyone, like, they're all magical beings. They know what's going on, and you weren't trying to hide it.
Yeah.
And Sura kind of looks at you oddly for a moment, and then you just kind of quietly, like, makes a hand, a gesture as in, you know, quiet, we're approaching something we haven't been in before. Shut the fuck up, right?
Right.
And then goes to take a step forward. I would like you to roll perception.
No reaction.
Nothing.
At least instantly. No super obvious reactions.
Nothing
so far.
That may
be what I'm...
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that's why I'm rolling perception.
Right.
But there's not like a, you know, wedding bells that go off on the other side of the forest or something.
No.
That's a 6, a rum.
All right, so she steps forward. One of her scouts takes a couple steps forward in front of her, and then immediately like sinks down into their, like, they take a one step forward, and that foot just goes straight down up to their waist, and they begin to try and pull themselves out, and they can't, and they're sinking into something.
Oh man, it's a proper jungle movie now. We've hit quicksand. Is anyone else reacting, or am I like?
Everyone is reacting in general, but like, what are you doing?
What am I going to do? It just looks like he kind of fell through into some quicksand.
Yeah, basically. It looks like his foot went right through, almost like his foot went through ice. You know what I mean? Like that fast.
Right.
Yeah. And then as you're watching, like where his other foot is, you can see the ground soften, like it gives way, and then it begins to quickly consume him. Now he's up to his waist with both legs.
Okay. Is anybody like getting rope or anything?
Yeah, there's already elves getting rope out. One of the elves stepped, who was a little bit more forward. One of the other scout had moved forward first, and you saw the ground give way underneath them too. Ground that was solid moments before,
or at least looked solid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now two of them are in it,
and where the rest of us are,
basically right at the edge of the trees.
I will just grab a rope with somebody that's getting a rope out and try and help haul somebody in, unless I can see something else useful to do.
Sioria sees you, and she pulls. You have a rope in your. You have one of those fancy silk ropes, right? That weigh less.
Oh yeah.
So you pull out one of those. She pulls out one. She nods and points, and she begins clambering up really fast this time. Trees behind you. Some of them kind of lean out and a little bit over the clearing, and she's going to go to a large branch to throw the rope over it and then use it to pull them back up and out.
Sure.
So that's what she's doing. And she kind of nods for you to follow.
Okay. I will follow her.
Now roll me a athletics for climb.
16.
So you clamber right in after. It's the same kind of tree. It's the same kind of vine. You've gotten used to it. You know what you're doing. This is a particularly easy one to climb because it's leaning out over the clearing. And you guys get to the top. You throw out ropes, and you're able to pull the other two out. Their skin is blistered and seared, like red, like almost like they got really bad sunburns, right? Not real bad damage, but damage. And so, and like almost like... like mild acid burns.
Was it like physically hot, like a heat burn, or was it more like acid or really, really basic?
Yeah, more of like they were exposed to stomach juices, that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. It's like a sarlacc pit.
Yep, with a fountain in the middle of it.
All right.
So I guess you guys are going to go around that.
Right. Yeah. I'll sort of, you know, while we're up here, I'll kind of look at Sioria and I'll be like, maybe not the best place for us to rest, Commander.
No. And if all the other clearings are like this one, then they are useless to us, and in fact, a danger.
Well, if they all give themselves away by being a clearing, they should be pretty easy to avoid, at least.
Yes, and we shall get to avoiding them. In the meantime, everyone, we camp here for the evening. Back in the woods a bit, but here. And you guys retreat from the clearing about 50 feet and began to set up camp.
I was thinking, I'm like, well, we're elves, right? Like, we can totally do, like, gorilla, like, treetop nests. And then I'm like, we're mostly high elves, though.
Sure is a wild elf, and her scouts would definitely be wild elves. So I would say that you guys, that they climb and help you all set up basically hammocks. You guys would sleep off the ground in hammocks. It's warm enough that it doesn't matter. And I would imagine the hammocks would have some sort of gauze you would then pull over you to protect you from things.
Other than the stone giant, who I'm going to guess is probably going to stay on the ground.
Just sits down, leans against a tree, and falls asleep.
And then... Hevra, who's a dwarf, right? The rest of us are all elves, right?
Hevra is sleeping in a hammock, but it's like a foot off the ground. Like that is high as Hevra will go. Everyone else is like 20, 30 feet up.
A foot off the ground is far enough off the ground to get you away from the insects on the jungle floor, which is a substantial improvement over...
That is a high lift away, yes. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. That is a substantial improvement.
We're getting ready to record more God's Fall with the main crew in DC, but we need to raise funds in order to do so. So we're releasing a limited amount of the first run overstocks of the God's Fall World Book for sale at godsfall.com/worldbook. We'll use the funds to purchase remote recording kits for the players, so God's Fall will continue to sound as good as it always has. We're also posting early episodes and a bunch of behind-the-scenes content on patreon.com/vardia. So stop by and check us out.
Go away, Aram.
I have business, Dylan. You said I can speak to you when your life is in danger and when we have business. This is one of those two times.
It's not the important time. Fine, sit down. What do you want?
You owe me money.
What?
I was looking around for other DMs for research. Yeah, that's real. Research. Anyway, I found startplaying.games, and I know you are holding out on me.
You're talking about startplaying.games, the largest site for connecting players with professional and hobbyist game masters to play any game system on any virtual tabletop?
That's the one. I know there are a bunch of people looking to replace their DM. I mean people who want to play D&D or other TTRPGs and don't know where to find a game. Startplaying.games offers a platform that makes professional game masters accessible to a growing community of players.
Yeah, they make the difficult task of finding online games easy, allowing players to search thousands of games by system, virtual tabletop, or even their schedule. You can see verified reviews of the game masters so you or your friends can find the right GM for your playstyle. We run a podcast. What does this have to do with me?
You must be making lots of money on startplaying.games, and as your co-DM, I want my cut.
That is a wild overestimation of your contribution.
Finding online games is hard and time-consuming, and even when you do find a group, scheduling is a nightmare. It can be really difficult to trust a new GM you don't know. That's why over 20,000 people have joined startplaying.games and trust their verified reviews of hundreds of game masters, one of which is you.
I'm a physicist. Why would I be secretly charging our guests? Also, I would barely call you a player, let alone a co-DM.
Start Playing Games handles the payment processing, provides easy scheduling, and allows GMs and players to start playing games that very same day. You have plenty of time to do both.
Fine. You know what? Don't come back before the end of next month.
Thanks, Dylan.
You are at best an assistant, Vardian.
Are you tired of searching through endless forums and Discord posts just to find a table to play at? Then head over to startplaying.games.
You can search startplaying.games by campaign or one shot, type of system, day and time you want to play, price, virtual tabletop platform, and even if a campaign is just getting started. You can also see verified reviews of game masters, which helps players find the right GM for their playstyle.
So head over to startplaying.games and just start playing. This show was produced and edited by Dead Ghost Productions. Find out more about us and all the shows we make at deadghostpro.com.